that lass on Radio 4 who's sort of Charlotte Green, she's got nothing on me.
Do you look into their eyes, Ian, or is that too personal a question? You don't want to go into this.
What would you be shouting at the television screen, Ian Lennox?
I can't proofread that.
But there is a slight suggestion that next season might be better. So
Let's hope so.
No one seems to get a penalty for pulling shirts nowadays, or hardly ever.
Or Seven Simple Seasons.
See what we did there? Yes, like it.
Fly Me to the Moon, the audio podcast companion with Rob Nichols.
It's another sensational Fly Me to the Moon. It's the podcast companion for issue 609. That, of course, is Norwich City. We look at the league tables. We see that Reading are in free fall. They're collapsing. They've just lost. So clearly, we don't have to worry about Reading in terms of the promotional side of things. Watford, likewise, well, I suppose they could be all right. Norwich City limping on in third place, but only 3 points ahead of Middlesbrough. So, Rob Nichols, clearly it's going to be a win for Middlesbrough, and all's going to be well for the world, isn't it?
Yes, of course. Absolutely.
We have got two extra special bonus co-presenters for this awesome edition of Fly Me to the Moon, which, curiously, on the front cover of the paper edition, features Donald Trump. How could you do it, Rob? How could you do it? I don't believe this, but, you know, there it is. But in order to celebrate not so much Trump's defeat, because he doesn't believe he has been defeated, but what the hey, we've got two fabulous folk, as mentioned, Thomas Bartley. Yay, Thomas, how are you?
I'm good, thanks, Alex. How are you?
Very good indeed. And, of course, I think making his debut, as far as I know, Rob, on the Fly Me to the Moon experience, it is Ian Smith. Nothing to do with Ian Smith. He used to be in charge of Rhodesia back in the day. How are you?
Funnily enough, no. But good afternoon, guys. Nice to be invited on. Thank you very much.
Excellent. Absolute delight. So, I mean, genuinely, could you have wished for any better, Rob, in terms of the last set of results pre-international break and Paddy McNair's heartbreak at Northern Ireland not succeeding?
Well, no, absolutely. We're doing really, really well. We look so organised. We look strong. And I think I put in the editorial of this issue, I think I did anyway, that we're a team to be feared by other clubs. I suppose our only weakness, obviously, is something that we carry from season to season, and that is our problems with scoring goals. But at this moment in time, I think you can only ask for so much. And it's such a transformation from the end of last season, when we were going right to the final game, trying to stay up, and now we are hanging on to the coattails of those in the promotion race. So that is a tremendous turnaround, isn't it?
Well, I think it could be even better than that as far as things are concerned. Ian, let's turn to yourself, because I think it's fair to say that we're under the byline nearly good for Borough. See what you did there? Very impressive. You know, nearly good for Borough. You've gone through a very honest article, basically, in which you conclude by saying that Neil Warnock has restored faith, promise, and above all else, the feel-good factor. So is it a case of the heck with the pandemic, the feel-good factor has returned to the Borough?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's obviously strange times for everyone, and even weirder without obviously having supporters in the stadiums. But yeah, I don't think I've felt like a unified fan base like we have at the moment since pre the AK walkout back in 2016. I just think you won't find many fans at all at the moment who are disagreeing that Warnock's the right man for the job. I think he's fully converted me, who I must admit when he first came in, I was less than impressed. Much the same as when Tony Pulis got the job originally a couple of years ago as well. But he's quickly converted me. I think he's one of those sort of, he's a Marmite manager, isn't he? So I think I always liken him to a manager version of Robbie Savage. If he's playing for you, you like him. If he's not playing for you, you cannot stand the guy. So yeah, no, it's, I think to be honest, everything he's doing at the minute, everything he touches turns to gold, basically. That's how I see it.
Well, I must admit, yeah, I was going to pick you up on the suggestion that it's since Aito Karanka was in charge, and of course that fateful Charlton Athletic day, but also the sort of lines about a septuagenarian, and you're even talking about actually not being averse to him taking over when Borough are in the Premiership next season.
Well, he's got a good record in the Premier League, it has to be said. And I just think, as much as obviously, like I say, I've mentioned his 70 plus, I don't think he's quite finished yet. I mean, even though I think he's led us to believe a few times in the last few appointments he's had that he's been looking to retire, But I think if we were to get up this year, which I know is probably a little bit pie in the sky, but who knows, I think he would be tempted by an extra year just to solidify us and maybe sort of, you know, establish us in the Premier League and we move on from there.
I think I'd probably say in that Neil's got an excellent record in terms of promotion from the Championship to the Premier League, but there are clubs like Crystal Palace, Queen's Park Rangers, and indeed Cardiff City who might say that maybe he's not great when he's actually sticking within the whole system. And let's not go back to Sheffield United or West Ham United back in the day, because that was a disaster with Carlos Tevez.
No, that'll open up another can of worms, won't it, I suppose, yeah. No, you're probably right, but I just think he'd probably deserve that opportunity. I think any manager that gets us out of the Championship deserves at least that opportunity to keep us there if we do go up, which is why I was disappointed that Karanka got the boot when he did, when we were up last time round. But I mean, obviously that's a different story, and we're trying to move on from the AK days, I suppose.
I think so, and besides, I think which club is Aitor in charge of these days? I don't know. He moves on so quickly these days. I mean, he's gone from Forest.
Birmingham.
Well, yes, exactly, yeah. Well, I suppose there was the Gary Monk connection there as well, and he's sort of headed off from that point of view. Tony Pulis is in charge of Sheffield Wednesday. It's like musical chairs. Rob, from your own point of view, I mean, the thoughts that Ian has been sharing with us there, I mean, you obviously quite happy with Neil Warnock. I mean, you see him regularly enough on the Zoom press conferences.
Yeah, and I had a chance to sort of, talking about what Ian's been talking about now, I put it to him this morning about the importance of his relationship with the fans at the moment, and he talked about as we know that he raffled his Manager of the Month trophy. He had to get in touch with EFL and make sure that it was okay. They gave him the blessing to do that, but he said that. He was totally knocked out by the fact that already they've raised over £5,000 for Butterwick Hospice.
Wow.
And he said in these times that it's very important to be doing things for those that are struggling. And he said, yes, it's really important to try and reach out to the fans when the fans can't go to the stadium. And he's actually he's increased it now. He realised that there's so many people has been knocked out by such a response that they've got a load of signed photos as well from players to give to other people, other fans donating. So that continues that donation. And it's obvious to him that it's very important, a two-way thing, the bridge to the fans. And he said that he's only sad that the only time he's met any of the fans is when he's been doing his cycling rides around. And people have been shouting encouragement or not as they drive past him. But it does seem that there's a real bond, and that £5,000 plus that's been raised also emphasise that, doesn't it? Really, at the moment.
Well, talking about that particular award, the Manager of the Month award, Rufus the Borough Dog, I think it's a comic strip you just need to buy Flowery to the Moon for, just for that alone, and reference to pickles, because I believe it's one of the Bartley household, Chris Bartley, who goes on to talk about the curse of the Manager Month award. Thomas, were you aware that your dad was actually writing this in this particular sort of instance, in which he goes through everyone from Tony Mowbray, through Aitor Karanka, through Jonathan Woodgate, and in fact, so far, it looks as though Warnock, whisper it, might have actually smashed that curse. But any thoughts, Thomas?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was something that over the years, since we were relegated in 2009, because obviously it was introduced, I think, about 2004. So that was the first time that our managers had ever been in contention for it. Mm. It has been, the curse has been something that, certainly I remember with, obviously Woodgate last season would be a prime example. We had the pickup of form around Christmas time, and then we all know what happened after the turn of the new year on that front.
It was all down to Wuhan. That's what caused it. It was Wuhan, nothing to do with the manager.
The new year didn't start on a great footing. But yeah, I think it was interesting what Ian was saying about how United fans are around Warnock, because I think at the end of last season, given how bleak things were really, when we returned in June time, a lot of fans were just really prepared to get around Warnock for that last running really towards the end of the season. And then in the summer, obviously it wasn't ideal circumstances around the size of our squad and how much time we had to regroup. But I think Warnock's been somebody that everybody's been able to rally around, and it's been great to see the pickup of form, especially since he obviously had a bad health himself with the COVID diagnosis. So I think it's been really great to see how we've, hopefully we will book that Manager of the Month trend.
Well, I just quote from the opening lines by, as mentioned, Chris Bartley. I've been really enjoying the reruns of Tales of the Unexpected on Sky Arts, despite the rather cheesy soundtrack. No, I won't go there. You cannot doubt that the cast and stories were very good, with, as it says on the tin, some genuine unexpected endings. You might wonder what on earth this has to do with my beloved borough. Surely an award can't have a curse on the otherwise healthy fortunes of the football club. For those readers with a hardy disposition, follow on. And again, the rest of it is in Fly Me to the Moon, the paper edition, which many of you might already have actually received from that point of view. A very historic time though, Rob, in more ways than one. Not only do we have two extra special guests on the programme, but it is also the day in which, should have a fanfare here, I'll try and actually insert a fanfare some way, shape or form, my borough debut is launched on the world.
Yes, absolutely. Yes. This was something born of the first lockdown and released into the second lockdown. Unfortunately, there are a couple of bookshops open. And I asked people like Thomas and Ian and many others, I just fired off loads of emails and asked people about their Borough fans, about their memories of their first game, because it's something obviously that we all have in common. We all went to a first game, but it's not the same game, quite obviously. And I just wondered, I tested it in issue 600 at the end of last year to see what it would look like getting a few answers together to see whether everyone would say the same thing, for instance. But it didn't, and I thought that let's give this a real good go and send a sort of message out to people of all different ages and Ayresome Park and Riverside and see and look at how it works together. And the responses I got, I thought this is worth putting together in a book, because there's some really, really interesting stuff and some really heartfelt things as well. It was like family history and it was like social history. Those that went to the football ground on the bikes and got the bikes looked after in the streets near Ayresome Park, to people who went on the tram or the trackless. And I don't know whether everyone will understand what a trackless is, but it used to go past near where Thomas lives in Normanby, because it was a trolley bus that had like this pole that was suspended from, got its electricity from above. And then people that went on buses at the time, when buses had letters on the front, not numbers, and it could be the players could be on the same bus. So it's very different sort of eras. But, you know, so, and as I say, a lot of people talking about different generations going and going with their parents, and then maybe at the end of their piece talking about how their children taking their children for the first time. And so it's obviously very important.
Very much so. I mean, as I've shared in the past, my first live game of any football thing was indeed Middlesbrough versus Chelsea, September 74. The first season, Jack Charlton actually led them up to the first division, and it was a 1-1 draw. And then, of course, followed that up by going on to see Manchester City 0, Middlesbrough 3. Which, I mean, you might well say, congratulations, well done, Borough. Fantastic. Borough 3,
yeah, well
City
done.
0. But for obvious reasons, you appreciate, Rob, that I just have to step away from that and say, well, my dad enjoyed it. I mean, he was a Borough fan, so that's great. And we work our way through that. Anyway,
What went wrong, Alex?
I share the whole line. Let's find out from our two guests today, because I know they're in the text, which you can purchase, of course, at My Borough Debut. But Thomas, let's come to you first. What were your first memories of your debut game at the Riverside? Because, of course, Ayresome Park, it might be something completely way in the past.
Well, I think mine might be the example of somebody that was led down a blind alley with the first game in terms of poor expectations of what might follow, because my first game was in the 2008-09 season, which before we were relegated from the Premier League, and it was a cup game against Yeovil that we won 5-1. So I'm not quite sure what my expectations at that time would have been about what every game was like. But I'm sure that in the few years that followed, I got a fairly good idea of what being a football fan was actually like in reality.
Yeah. You see, if you'd actually followed the line of following City, you would have been in a different world entirely, basically. But never mind. That's by the by. We won't mention that at all. I will actually turn to Ian Smith and say, Ian, what about your first game memories?
Right. Well, I think my first game, to be honest, is a bit of a source of gentle disagreement in the family household when I lived at home, because I'm utterly convinced that my first game was a 6-0 victory over Leicester City at home in 1990. But my dad seems to think it wasn't that. He can't remember the game himself that it will have been, but he seems to think it might have been a little bit earlier than that. However, perhaps that's just a false memory because it was such a memorable game, I don't know, but it will have been one of the first games I went to. And I can imagine my dad will have been saying at the time, it's not always like this, son. And obviously I've since figured out that it's not always as straightforward as that. But yeah, no, it will have been the one I can first remember is the 6-0 victory. And I think Bernie Slaven, it's the one where he hooked the ball over his head and stuck it in the top bins, weren't it? So yeah, that's the first game I can remember, definitely. And it's probably the first one that I always go to on YouTube for a few highlights clips to reminisce, because anyone who knows any of the work I do, it tends to be a lot of nostalgia-driven stuff. So I'm always looking at past games. So yeah, that's the one I can remember the first. Great memories.
I've got to say, Ian, I'm very, very impressed with the fact that you're even wearing a retro kit with indeed N-Power Football League on its sleeve. I mean, N-Power, who have been since taken over by Eon.
Yeah.
You know, so a whole new world there, really.
Yeah, it's Football Shirt Friday today as well. And I'm actually at work at the moment, and we've been raising money for the Bobby Moore Fund for cancer research. So we've been going around with the football shirts on today. There's a few of my other colleagues as well who are all chipping in. There's a few Leeds fans about, which I'm not best pleased about, but you can't have everything, can you? So
any,
yeah,
any Man City wearing shirts at all? Any Man City wearing people? No.
There's a few Doncaster Rovers, because I'm based in Doncaster at the minute, so there's a few Donny Rovers ones going around. Yeah, but yeah.
But no Scunthorpe, presumably.
No, actually, it would have been nice to see some Scunthorpe rather than Donny Rovers, because I'm not a Donny Rovers fan either, so...
So it goes. Never mind. Okay. Great stuff. I mean, Rob, obviously, maybe you got the wrong memo. Maybe it's not actually football beanie hat wearing day.
Yeah,
it's actually sort of football shirt wearing day. Easy mistake.
Yes. Okay. Sorry. I mean, sorry.
Thomas obviously proudly wearing his Borough shirt, etc. And what the hey?
I promise you I didn't know, but I'm not complaining.
Yeah, he may say he didn't know, Ian, but Thomas is always across these kind of things. He's got his finger on the proverbial cultural pulse. We know the line is actually there. But we're talking nostalgia, and you mentioned obviously the reason we're having Football Shirt Wearing Friday, because of course of Bobby Moore and so on. But let's talk about another World Cup winner the last podcast edition, it aired, I think, on the day that Nobby Styles sadly passed. So we haven't had a chance since then to obviously do a full tribute to him in the same way as we did with Jack Charlton earlier this year. And I mean, I suppose apart from the shocking news right at the very end that he had his ashes scattered at Old Trafford as opposed to Essen. Well, I suppose it would have been difficult to scatter it at Essen Park, really, wouldn't it, these days? But,
yeah.
You know, it's just a thought then. It's fair to say, in terms of football memories, under Stan Anderson, the arrival of Nobby Styles to Middlesbrough was at the time in the early 70s, I think we're talking 72, 73 here, what for me was almost the equivalent to what latterly was Juninho joining the club. I mean, it was really big news at the time.
Yes, we a World Cup winner. But remember joining a club with Harold Shepherdson, who was the trainer. Who was
also a World Cup winner.
Yeah, and also the club doctor, Dr. Phillips, who was also the World Cup doctor with England. So there was, it was a massive thing, wasn't it? Because he was such a recognisable star, and of course, ironically, that the person that exited him from the club was Jack Charlton, another World Cup winner, and Jack obviously didn't think that Nobby was the way to go, and that he sold him to his brother, didn't he, Bobby, at Preston.
He
brought in Bobby Murdoch, that's right, but also slotted Graeme Souness into the midfield.
I think he goes on to some Sky Channel these days and comes up with various quotes. I don't know.
He had a sort of dubious sort of career, and But yeah, he did all right. Yes, but Nobby, I recall from being a boy and seeing Nobby driving around Middlesbrough actually in a car, and he was such a small guy he could hardly see over the steering wheel. So that's what I was saying that to my dad. I remember him being in front of us once in his car, and then and turning the corner, and it was often to be seen around Borough, and as somebody mentioned to me yesterday that he had a strange sort of gaze on the football field, and that was probably because of his terrible eyesight. But he achieved so much considering his height, considering his real problems with his eyesight. He was such a fearsome competitor and absolutely crucial to that World Cup winning side. Yeah. And for Borough to sign somebody like that, as you say, Alex, it was like pretty earth-shattering, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. It was front-page news of the Evening Gazette, certainly at the time. And just looking back at his findings here, his first pay for Manchester United, £3, 5 shillings a week, plus £1 expenses. I mean, I don't think Paul Pogba is on much more, as far as I know. You know, it's about that sort of thing. Yeah. What the heck? Thomas, obviously, Nobby Styles born long before and you were sort of entered the planet, etc. But from a historical point of view, I mean, I can't say I remember Wilf Mannion or any of the sort of the great Borough players from that point of view. But what were your thoughts about Nobby Styles and when you've sort of seen what he did and so on?
Well, yeah, I think there was some really touching tributes after he died, really. And I think it's sad that obviously the circumstances of his death, dementia and whatnot, it's obviously a massive issue at the moment, really. Yeah. It affected a number in that World Cup squad. And it's certainly something that needs to obviously be looked into. But yeah, I mean, hearing Rob talk about it there, it's a part of Borough history, really. And it's something that you look back on, and it's maybe quite hard to translate to now. You know, I'm not quite sure what it would be like now if a World Cup winner came to Borough again. But yeah, obviously a massive moment for Borough, and sad news that he did pass away.
Yeah. And Ian, any thoughts from yourself?
To echoing Thomas's, really. It was a sad way for a legend to sort of bow out, if you like. I mean, I don't know much about that era because I think I've heard a lot from my dad. My dad's been a Borough boy. He grew up, and obviously it was often at Ayrton Park throughout the 70s. So he's told me a lot about the Jack Charlton years. Mm. And he just mentioned, obviously, you know, the time that a player like Nobby Styles turning up at Borough is, you know, in relative terms, a bit like a Janino or Ravinelli rocking up at the Riverside. You know, these are big names. Mm. And I suppose, really, you know, for us to have him for the couple of seasons that we did have Nobby Styles in the 70s will have been a big thing at the time. Yeah, so no, it was terribly sad to see his passing, as I say, and the manner of his passing as well. And like Thomas alluded to, you know, it's a big issue at the moment. And the fact that I think Gareth Southgate was talking about it in the week, wasn't he, as well, about, you know, the ball heading and all that sort of stuff and dementia links and everything. So, yeah, it's a hot topic at the minute. And as I say, it was a sad way for Nobby to bow out, yeah.
So, Gareth Southgate, clearly Jeff Hurst, and indeed, I think Frank Lampard have all actually gone on record recently saying that something needs to be addressed as far as this is concerned. It may well mean that the traditional notion of the big centre-forward or indeed sort of heading and so on becomes a thing that we look back and we say, how could we actually do that? Or we look for protective gear. I don't know. It's a different line entirely. Rob, I think there's only one Jimmy Flynn piece of poetry we'd actually look to go for this. And if we won't throw Thomas and Ian into the proverbial firing line of actually saying, quoting as well, but I think we'll do our little piece. And hopefully after this, we'll return to a consideration of how the Canaries are basically going to come to a sticky end at the Borough this weekend. Rob, are you ready to take the lead with respect to this? Jimmy Flynn, a little tribute to Nobby Styles. Also, ready to go, I'll take the first line and then we'll go from there. Nobby Styles, a legendary footballer, has passed away. But as in the English League nation's hearts, he will always stay.
A player who at Manchester United learned and plied his trade in the twilight of his career.
For Middlesbrough FC, memorably played. But it was the international stage where his reputation was made.
Nobby Styles was a player with a toothless smile who in England's engine room covered many a mile.
The stoker that is England's World Cup fire, a ferocious terrier of a tackler.
who in his quest for the ball would never tire, covering every inch of ground.
Urged on by example those around, a diminutive man standing 5'5".
Gaining everlasting fame with a Wembley post-match jive, playing every minute of every game.
In England's glorious World Cup winning campaign, world football's greatest playmakers, he did unfailingly...
Tame. Nullifying their impact on a game, never letting opponents settle on the ball.
In every game, he gave his all, rallying teammates like a clarion call.
His combative style unattractive but devastatingly effective, rendering world-class footballers totally defective.
Sinking hapless opponents, felling them under the waterline. His aggression allowed others space and time to shine.
And propelled England over the World Cup winning line after conquering opponents powerful and big.
He treated the nation to an impromptu celebratory jig. Nobby Styles with his toothless, joyous beam.
The unsung hero of England's 1966 World Cup winning team.
Splendid. We made it there in the end. Nobby, that was for you. Norwich actually have an issue, or we've had issues with Norwich in the past. Thomas Dowd, yeah. If you remember that Wembley trek a few years ago for the playoff scenario where clearly Patrick Bamford had decided, no, he's going to look forward to when he joins Leeds United and start scoring goals for them. What are your thoughts with respect to what we're going to see, to, or what you're going to see on screen, at least, as opposed to in person, against Norwich tomorrow? Are you cautiously optimistic?
It's funny, actually, you should say about that playoff final, because a young lad called Jude, that's now 10-year-old, it was his first, he writes in the book, it was his first game, that playoff final. I don't think I'd want it. Yeah, can you imagine that?
But, talk about a bad start. Yeah.
But Patrick Bamford actually got injured, Alex, playing Norwich when we beat Norwich only about a month before the playoff final. And we'd beaten them twice that season. And we'd rather see a game like that tomorrow than the playoff final, that's for sure. It's going to be really difficult, though, isn't it? They're a team that scores goals. And in Pukki, who went away playing for Finland, actually scored for Finland. So we're going to have to be very strong in defence. And then we're going to have to beat Ben Gibson, our former defender. Yeah, we're going to have to try and find some way of scoring, because we haven't scored for a couple of games. But usually pretty tight games between us. Not that much in it. So
that's very true, of course. And I still haven't forgiven Burnley and indeed Sean Dyche for why he wouldn't actually allow Ben Gibson to actually come back to Borough. But that's a by the by. You know, I think that's outrageous. Thomas, we'll move to yourself. Any thoughts on how you're going to sort of celebrate a win against Norwich tomorrow?
Well, obviously there's a bit of Middlesbrough interest in the team with Gibson and Hugill. It doesn't seem like Hugill. I remember this time last season watching the highlights towards the start, and it seemed like he was netting for QPR every other week. But it doesn't seem to have been as prolific this season for Norwich. But yeah, I mean, obviously a bit tarred by other games, like you were saying, the playoff final springs to mind as a not very nice encounter with Norwich. But yeah, I think that other than them and Swansea, we've kind of tested ourselves against all of the top talent in the Championship so far this season. So another win would really kind of set out those credentials that we've already shown so far. So yeah, fingers crossed.
We pass on our condolences, obviously, to Delia Smith's mum, who passed away aged 100 years of age, Netta. I suppose that's one thing. Maybe they'll have a sort of pause for reflection and all sorts of things. Mind you, I suppose these days, with respect to a minute or 2 minute silence, you wouldn't notice the difference. But anyway, that's by the by. Yeah, thank you, Ian. At least you managed to get that. I see everybody else. What? Where's it going to be?
Wasn't lost on me, you're right.
Yeah, Ian, what are your thoughts about the Norwich game? Do you think it's one in which we can move certainly another game undefeated? Or, as I said, if we get those 3 points, we'll be exactly tied with 21 points apiece with Norwich in the Championship.
Just touching upon what Rob said, he mentioned obviously about their attacking prowess. I mean, they are, obviously, when you look at the team, they have got goals in them. But actually, interestingly enough, they have only scored 4 more goals than us this season so far. And the games that they have won, they've kind of, I wouldn't say scraped, but they've not hammered opponents just so far. Pukki's had a bit of a slow start in relative terms for him. just the 4 goals this season. And obviously, Hugill's only got the 1. And I think, yeah, they've already lost to Bournemouth. They've lost to Derby as well, who were struggling. And they got booted out of the League Cup in the first round at Luton as well. So there is weaknesses there. And they've, you know, been unconvincing in wins against Rotherham, Wickham and Birmingham as well. So there's weaknesses that we can exploit. I think Warnock's a clever operator. I mean, we went to Blackburn other week, didn't we? Free scoring Blackburn, and we nullified their threat quite easily, and even looked like we should have won that game by a country mile in the end with the amount of chances that we had. So I don't really think we should be fearing Norwich at all, and I would be disappointed if we didn't get the 3 points tomorrow personally.
There you are. You see a bullish response from Ian Smith, and now newly formed, probably foundation member of the Neil Warnock's Great Fan Club, which is great.
You know, I've got a couple of friends who are Sheffield Wednesday fans. They'll not enjoy that whatsoever. But yeah, I was never a fan of Warnock, and then obviously I always used to join in with the stick that he got from the Wednesday fans, who were some of my mates. But now they're all openly disgusted at me for being a newfound, like you say, a member of the Warnock fan club. So there we go.
it's a growing body. A little shout out to the Red Army TV team, who I think might be listening to this as well. Don't forget, of course, My Borough Debut is the book that you can get in your stockings for Christmas. If you're talking about another Bernie Slavin book, I return back to Rufus the Borough Dog. There is one panel there which I found hilarious and certainly thought it was very effective, and it does refer indeed to Bernie Slavin and Christmas books and various other bits and pieces. So that's in the latest edition of Fly Me to the Moon, the magazine edition, issue 609. Rob, how do people get hold of a copy of this awesome text?
Yes, that's right. Don't go to the Riverside. If you go to the website fmttmborough.com, I've put a little thread up today where you can click on to buy the fanzine, and it's got, as you said, it's got a pretty good cover, hasn't it? Pretty
well. A Donald Trump cover. Not if you're a Joe Biden supporter, but what the heck, you know.
I think the joke's on Donald, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, well, let's hope so. Well, anyway, yeah. let's step away from that thing entirely from that point of view, apart from saying that we need predictions, basically. Thomas, what are you going to go for tomorrow as far, or indeed whenever you listen to the podcast, what's the result for Borough against Norwich?
Given the last couple of nil-nils, I'll be a bit cautious and I'll go 1-0 for us.
I'm going to go 2-0. I'll throw that in there. Ian?
We're going to concede this week, and I think we're going to finally open up a little bit. I think Norwich have got, you know, with the attacking prowess we've mentioned, I think they may get a goal past us. I'm going to go for 2-1 win to Borough.
Okay, and Rob?
Well, I'd settle for either of those results, and I think it's a while since we've conceded first, isn't it? So I'd rather not see that happen. I'll go for 2-0.
There you are. So matching sort of lines from that point of view. We'll be back, of course, for Borough versus Millwall on the 12th of December. Do you know, we haven't even had a chance to talk about Borough's next home game because it's a couple of back-to-backs. Things tend to move fairly quickly when we're back after the fixture on holidays, etc. Because, of course, it's Derby County that join us on Wednesday.
Wayne Rooney's Derby County.
Exactly. That's right. We will have to see how we actually develop with respect to the whole sort of Derby thing. I mean, briefly, Ian, any sort of thoughts on the Derby game?
Could be a potential banana skin. I'm not sure what's gone off with Cocu at Derby. Something clearly wasn't right because they've got a better squad than what the league table suggests.
I think quite simply, Cocu. That's it. End
all. Yeah, basically. Yeah. I just think Rooney might have that sort of galvanising effect. You never know. So I think we ought to be wary of Derby when they come to the other side.
And Thomas, are you concerned about Wazza coming to the Riverside?
Yeah, I think I'd agree with what Ian said, really. We have to be a bit cautious. But I think by no means will it be an easy task for him. You know, Lampard had took over in pre-season, didn't he, when he became Derby manager. Had a good season, challenged for the playoffs, and then was able to move on to Chelsea. So if Wayne Rooney's fancying it as a vehicle to progress his career, then I'm not sure it'll be too much of an easy season. But yeah, we'll have to be cautious.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, of course, it's away to Huddersfield Town after that. I think we will be back before the Swansea City game, which is, of course, on the 2nd of December. Rob, finally, how do people subscribe or indeed collect the early editions of this season's Fly Me to the Moon, the magazine?
Yes, if you once again go to FMTTM, it's FMTTMborough.com these days, and click on, there's a subscription thing there. So click on that and you can get any of the back issues. We've just put out the third issue of the season. And Thomas, I've got to drop your fanzine off for you later on.
Thank you. Yeah.
What other editor in chief actually physically puts the fanzines through the letterboxes of individuals? I mean, this is just dedication above and beyond the cause. I'm particularly impressed, Rob, by the way you fly over to Hawaii to drop in FMTTM ones there as well. It's very good. Yeah.
Well, Thomas, the Bartley family, we used to put them all together every Thursday, didn't we? And now because of social distancing, I have to do them myself. But Thomas's mum does all the labels and everything like that. So we're still a team.
It's a mini conference thing from that point of view. And Ian, obviously, in the joys of Doncaster, keeping the Borough fan flying and the Borough flame flying, which is awesome. Ian Smith, Thomas Bartley, welcome to your, well, thank you for taking part in Fly Me to the Moon, the podcast. I know Rob's delighted. He's very excited. He was so excited when he said we got into one, but two. It's just fantastic. But we need to wrap up with those traditional words. Rob, have you trained these folk? Do they know what we're about to say?
I don't think so.
Well, at the very end of every FMTTM Rob Nichols editorial, there are seven words, which are come on, Borough, and up the Borough. That's what we need to go out with. So after three, a one, two, three.
Come on, Borough. Up the Borough.
Yeah. Shall we try it one more time, just so we get it all in sequence then? After three. Three. Come on, Borough.
Come on, Borough.
Up the Borough.
Up the Borough.